231. That's the average number of apps used by many companies. This leads to a lot of context and tab switching that drains employee focus and costs your company. Grammarly can help. Grammarly's AI works in over 500,000 apps and websites, making it easy for your team to write clearly and on brand without disrupting workflow. Join 70,000 teams who save an average of $5,000 per employee per year using Grammarly. Go to grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The investigation into 9-year-old Erica Baker's disappearance had been anything but straightforward. There were twists and turns at every avenue, ever-changing statements, and the small community of Kettering, Ohio, was forced to face a harsh reality. December 10, 2004, should have brought an end to the case, but despite getting a confession, Erica's family and the detectives that worked the case are still left with unanswered questions. Kettering, Ohio is a small city of around 57,000 people. It is often regarded as a safe and quiet place to live and the perfect place to raise a family. Kettering sits close to Dayton, Ohio, and the suburbs give the illusion that its residents are immune to the problems of big city life. But that all changed in 1999. The disappearance of Erica Baker continues to cast a shadow over the city. Thank you for listening to Crimatorium, the place where crime resides. Crimatorium can also be found on YouTube. To understand Erica's disappearance and its impact on the community, we first need to understand who Erica was. On June 22, 1989, Greg and Melissa, called Misty by friends and family, welcomed their only daughter, Erica Nicole Baker, into the world. Erica had been preceded by three brothers who were overjoyed to have a sister. The Baker boys roughhoused with Erica, but also took a protective stance over her. Anyone that wanted to get to Erica had to go through them first. Greg and Erica shared a special relationship. She was a real daddy's girl, and she loved spending daddy-daughter time with Greg. Erica, her brothers, and her parents would spend weekends hiking and camping. Despite being younger and much smaller than her brothers, Erica could keep up with the pack. A special memory that Greg holds dear is the memory of him teaching her how to fish in the nearby Indian Riffle Park. The park was just a few blocks from the Baker home, and he remembers how Erica's face lit up when she finally got a catch. But not all was well in the Baker home. The children were happy and had a comfortable upbringing, but Misty and Greg were having issues behind the scenes. Eventually, they separated, with Misty taking Erica and her brothers. Greg was allowed to have his children over the weekend, where he would take them into Indian Riffle Park. Indian Riffle Park was a focal point for those in the neighborhood. Erica's school was in the park, along with the senior and recreation center. It wasn't uncommon for Erica and the other children to wander into the park on a Sunday afternoon and play in the lush grass until the streetlights came on. Erica's best friend, Katie, said the two often spent afternoons making up dance routines and discussing boy bands. Erica was described as a bright, kind, and tenacious girl. She was doing well in school and even hoped to join the cheerleading squad. Greg would collect his children each weekend, which was great for Erica, as Katie lived just a few doors down. Following their divorce, Misty moved in with her mother, Pam, and continued to co-parent with Greg. Both Erica and Katie had been given the stranger danger talk of the late 1990s, and both knew to be vigilant. By 1999, Erica's life had settled down, and she was content living with her mother and grandma and continued to have a good relationship with her father. One drizzly February afternoon would change the lives of the Bakers forever, and the investigation that followed would be a tangled web of lies and deceit. On Sunday, February 7th, 1999, Greg had spent the weekend with his children and was now getting ready to drive them home. As the group left, tiny droplets of rain began to fall on what had been a nice, temperate day. Greg and the kids piled into the car and made the short drive back to Misty and Pam's house. During the ride, Erica asked Greg if he had been able to get the tickets for the father-daughter dance that evening. Erica had been begging Greg for weeks to get tickets for the dance, but they were all sold out. Greg had been so desperate to make his little girl happy that he called around friends and those in the community, offering whatever it took to get those tickets. All of Greg's efforts had failed, and he reminded Erica that he wasn't able to get tickets. This upset Erica, and Greg promised to make it up to her. The disappointment was short-lived, and as the car pulled into the driveway of her home, Erica bolted from the car straight into the arms of her mother and grandmother. With a big smile on her face, Erica rambled off the events of the weekend to her mother, Misty. Greg kissed his children goodbye, not knowing it would be the last time he would ever see Erica again. At around 3 p.m., Erica became antsy. Despite the drizzle outside, it was a lovely day, and she wanted to go to Indian Riffle Park. Pam and Misty pushed back, telling Erica that she could play inside, but Erica persisted. She ran and grabbed her favorite Winnie the Pooh pink jumper and matching pink raincoat and flashed her best puppy dog eyes and promised Misty and Pam she would be safe. The two relented, telling Erica to be home by the time the streetlights came on. She then asked if she could take the family dog, Jamie, a fluffy Shih Tzu. Seeing how excited Erica was, Pam and Misty grabbed the leash, and by 3:30 p.m., Jamie and Erica were out the door. The two splashed through endless puddles as they made their way to Indian Riffle Park. Witnesses and friends of the Bakers spotted Erica walking into the park with Jamie. Pam had spent that afternoon in the basement doing housework and talking on the phone. When she turned to look out the window, she saw that it was dark. She didn't recall hearing the familiar door latch or the jingle of Jamie's collar, and she became worried. Pam raced upstairs to find Misty, who was also worried. It was dark, and there was no sign of Erica. She had never run off before and was a polite and well-behaved little girl. To make matters worse, Pam and Misty knew that Erica was terrified of the dark. The pair grabbed their coats, put on their shoes, and headed out onto the streets of Kettering. Pam would later say that she searched in bushes, cars, and abandoned lots for her granddaughter. She called Erica's friends and visited their houses, hoping Erica had taken refuge from the downpour, but there was no sign of her. Misty and Pam marched toward Indian Riffle Park, vowing to search every last inch. The first place they searched was the recreation center, where the daddy-daughter dance was being held. Misty and Pam pressed their faces to the window, batting away oncoming rain droplets. They carefully surveyed the rec center. Dozens of little girls were dancing with their fathers, but Erica was not among them. Misty continued searching in the park while Pam ran to the house to use the phone. She dialed 911 and told the Kettering police dispatch that her granddaughter had gone missing. Within minutes, Pam saw flashes of blue and red at the window, and then the knock on the door came. Detective Bob Green hadn't been with the force long when Erica disappeared. Despite being a junior cop, he would play a major role in the investigation. Erica's family have praised Detective Green's efforts over the years, and although he is now retired, he is still heavily invested in the case. He wasn't the only one who had received a call about Erica's disappearance. Just as Greg was settling in for the evening, the phone rang. Misty relayed to him every parent's worst nightmare. Their little girl was missing. The Kettering Police Department took the call seriously. It was out of the ordinary for a child to go missing in Kettering, and they were confident that the case would be resolved within a matter of hours or days. Detective Green and his team arrived at Misty and Pam's house later that evening. A complete statement was taken, and the decision to escalate the case was made. Detective Green would later recall that he believed Erica had fallen into the 2.9 million gallon pond in Indian Riffle Park. Pam and Misty refuted this theory from the outset. Erica was a good swimmer and had visited the pond many times with her father. She knew not to venture too close to the water's edge and knew especially to stay away from the water when she was alone. As there was no sign of Erica, Detective Green and the Kettering Police Department firmly stood by their theory that Erica had drowned. Because it was dark outside, the pond search would have to wait until the next morning. In the meantime, the Kettering Police Department dispatched helicopters and dogs to survey the area. Pam and Misty were ordered back home in case Erica returned, and officers were tasked with searching every inch of the park overnight. Misty did not want to just head home when her daughter was missing. It took a while to calm her down and persuade her that waiting for Erica at home was the best course of action. Erica's brothers had now learned that their baby sister was missing, and they too wanted to scour the park to search for the sister they had sworn to protect. Nobody in the Baker household went to sleep that night. By the next morning, February 8th, the Kettering police had created a command center in the Indian Riffle Park's rec center. Erica's disappearance had made local and statewide news. 300 people from the local community arrived at Indian Riffle Park, dressed in raincoats and boots, ready to look for the little girl. Many have described Kettering as being very close-knit and interconnected. And this proves that. While people did their best to be supportive, some couldn't help to throw a shadow of suspicion over Greg. Misty and Pam also came under fire from negative comments, but in the initial days of the investigation, the family were too focused on finding Erica to care. That morning, February 8th, Detective Green announced that the pond would be drained entirely as part of the search for Erica. The Kettering Police Department, Fire Department, and other agencies readied themselves for the task ahead. The pond, the size of a football field, had 2.9 million gallons of water inside and measured 360 feet long and 160 feet wide. For the next 3 days, agencies worked on draining every single drop from the pond. Greg, Misty, and Pam watched on, but in their heart of hearts, they knew Erica wasn't in there. Detective Green would later say that he was 99% certain that Erica had drowned, so it came as a total surprise to him when no sign of her was found. The pond's drainage had attracted nationwide coverage, and the FBI had been called in to assist in the investigation. Officers from all agencies worked 16 hours a day, sometimes 7 days a week. The response by the Kettering Police Department cemented to Greg and Misty that something about their daughter's disappearance was severe. This was not a case of a girl who had just wandered off. All sex offenders in the area were interrogated along with Erica's family as per standard protocol. While investigators found nothing to indicate that any of them were involved, the residents of Kettering began to turn on Greg. While he was come to terms with the disappearance of Erica, he then had to deal with being viewed as a monster. Greg told the media about one incident that stuck in his mind. In the days and weeks after Erica's disappearance, he had visited a local restaurant to grab a bite to eat between searches. Instead of being served, Greg was asked to leave because it was too sad for the waitress to serve him. At times, people would even pull their children away from him and whisper when he was walking through town. Shortly after Erica disappeared, the Kettering Police Department got its first breakthrough. An elderly couple had seen Erica's disappearance on the news and realized they were eyewitnesses. On February 7th, they had been walking their dog Muppet through Indian Ruffle Park when they spotted a little girl in the distance. It was Erica. The couple said Erica was playing with Jamie in the rain and puddles near the bleachers. They told investigators that they looked away for one moment, and in that moment, Erica disappeared. Hours later, at around 5 p.m., they came across Jamie once again. This time, she was soaking wet and terrified. Her leash and collar were still on, but nobody was holding the end. The couple called animal control, where Jamie was taken to a shelter, and she was eventually returned with her family. The elderly gentleman was able to recall that Indian Riffle Park had been desolate that afternoon due to the poor weather, and they and Erica had been the only ones there, or so he thought. Jamie had now been found, but that still didn't answer what happened to Erica. She deeply loved animals, especially Jamie. So why would she leave the dog alone in the rain? None of this made sense to Misty or Greg, and they knew that Erica hadn't left voluntarily.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
The air in Kettering was tense in the wake of Erica's disappearance. Children were no longer allowed to play outside in the neighborhood, and many of their freedoms had been stripped away. Katie, Erica's best friend, told the media that she wasn't allowed to walk to the bus stop alone. People feared that a child murderer or a serial killer was on the loose, and their child would be next. The Bakers was an average family. If it could happen to them, it could happen to anyone. Greg, Pam, and Misty continued to aid investigators in their search. Pam helped to man the phone lines at the rec center, which had been created by the FBI and the NCMEC, National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. The services offered by both of these agencies were given to the investigation at no cost to the city or the police department. Months passed without any progress in Erica's case. Pam, Misty, and Greg were now slowly coming to the realization that Erica wasn't coming home. Her three older brothers had the news broken to them, and they were shattered. Erica's classmates mourned her loss, and the classroom always had an empty desk. Pam continued her efforts at the command center, and June 22, 1999, marked Erica's 10th birthday. This was the first birthday they had celebrated without her. The group gathered at the command center, singing happy birthday around a cake Misty had bought. She cut the first slice and wrapped it into some napkins. She told her mother that she was going to freeze the piece so that when Erica came home, she could eat it. Amidst the celebration of Erica's birthday, officers manning the phones received a phone call. The anonymous caller urged them to look further into a man named Christian John Gabriel. Christian Gabriel was well known to the Kettering Police Department, as was his girlfriend Jan Franks. The two were known to use drugs and picked up dozens of minor charges between them. Gabriel had already been interviewed concerning Erica's disappearance, but this interview revealed very little. What he did tell investigators was that on February 7th, he, Jan Franks, Clifford Butts, and Clifford's wife were hanging out in the parking lot of the Meyer supermarket in Kettering. The four had been shoplifting in order to fund their addictions, and according to Gabriel, they had gone their separate ways. His version of events would change numerous times throughout the years, and this was merely the first iteration of what happened that day. The pressure against Gabriel was building, and in July 1999, Detective Green received a call that would change the course of the case. It was Clifford Butts, who was currently in prison. Clifford told Detective Green he wanted to talk to him. The two men stared each other down before Clifford finally decided to speak. He told Detective Green that Gabriel had pointed out one of Erica's missing person posters to him and confessed to killing her on February 7, 1999. Off the back of this unexpected interview with Clifford Butts, Detective Green requested an interview with Gabriel, and the two spoke back and forth for hours. Gabriel was a tough cookie to crack. He continued to maintain his innocence, telling Detective Green and other officers present that he had no idea what had happened to Erica. Detective Green was known for his excellent interrogation skills and his ability to dig for the truth. He knew that if he wanted the truth from Gabriel, it would take much more than an interview and a lie detector test. By the 2000s, Gabriel had moved away from Kettering to Jeffersonville, Ohio, and had begun living with a new girlfriend who had no idea about his connection to the Erica Baker case. In a bid to rattle Gabriel, Detective Green and his team flooded the area where they lived with Erica's missing person posters. One afternoon, Gabriel's girlfriend received a knock at the door. It was Detective Green. The woman, who has never been named publicly, politely welcomed Detective Green into her home. She had heard of Erica's case through the local news, and like everyone else, she wanted to help out however she could. The two went through the kitchen into the living room, and Detective Green noticed Erica's missing person poster pinned on the fridge. The woman explained that she had placed the poster on the fridge as a reminder to watch out for Erica. She also explained that she and Gabriel had met in the early 2000s and had a child together, but he had been unable to shake his old habits of crack cocaine and stealing. Gabriel's relapse led him to sell his own son's toys and steal from his uncle to fund his addiction. These charges landed him in prison once again, and his girlfriend was left to pick up the pieces. It was during this charge that Gabriel told his girlfriend she deserved to know what was going on. In another call, Gabriel's girlfriend said to him that she had been visited by Detective Green, which rattled Gabriel. Detective Green had been watching all of this from the sidelines. With Gabriel behind bars, he knew that he couldn't run away this time. On December 10, 2004, Detective Green paid Gabriel another visit. It was during this interview that Gabriel's story changed yet again. In this iteration of events, he told Detective Green that on February 7, 1999, he, Jan Franks, and Clifford Butts had been in the van at Myers that day. The group had gotten together to shoplift and smoke crack, which they are assumed to have done in the parking lot. After they stole from Meyer, the group planned to head back to Gabriel's apartment to smoke more drugs. Gabriel was the one behind the wheel, and the group set off, but as they reached Glengarry Drive, they heard something hit the van. Terrified, the group poured out of the van to see the body of a little girl on the ground. It was Erica. Gabriel was able to describe Erica and Jamie accurately and insisted to Detective Green that it was an accident. He later told him that Erica walked out in front of the van, giving him no time to stop. Instead of calling for help, the group decided to throw little Erica's body into the truck and continue their journey to Gabriel's house. The group went to his apartment and smoked crack cocaine, all while Erica's body lay in the back of his van. Once their appetites had been satiated, they returned to the van. Gabriel and Jan Franks confirmed to each other that Erica hadn't moved the entire time they had been in their apartment. Once they were satisfied that she was dead, Jan Franks hopped into the driver's seat and took charge of the situation. Gabriel also told Detective Green that Jan forbade them from taking Erica to a hospital, saying it would cause them serious trouble. Detective Green was eager to speak with Jan Franks, but there was just one problem. She died in 2001 of an overdose. The Kettering Police Department had interviewed Franks in the months after Erica's disappearance, but like Gabriel, she had been a tough cookie to crack. Her lawyer, Beth Lewis, maintained a wall of silence, urging Franks not to say anything. Franks followed Beth's advice, and the interviews quickly went nowhere. With Franks out of the picture, Detective Green had no choice but to believe what Gabriel was saying. The two chatted back and forth for hours after Gabriel confessed to hitting Erica with his van. As you will see, Gabriel is an unreliable narrator. He told Detective Green that after they had smoked crack, Jan Franks drove the group to Huffman Dam with Erica's body in tow. There was just one issue with this story, though. As investigators would come to find out, Jan Franks couldn't drive a manual car, which the van was. Gabriel flip-flopped between different locations where Erica's body could have been buried. At first he said Huffman Dam, then he said Caesar Creek State Park. He told Detective Green he had stayed in the van while Erica was buried, but then promised to take him to her final resting spot. Gabriel's stories were wildly inconsistent. How could he lead them to the body if he was in the van the whole time? He told Detective Green that he waited in the van for around 30 minutes and the group took a particular path. How would he know that unless he was there? A few hours into the interview, Gabriel requested a bathroom break. As he got up to leave, he turned to Detective Green and asked, "What would I get for tampering with evidence, gross abuse of a corpse, and vehicular manslaughter?" Detective Green took a deep sigh of relief. He had finally elicited the confession he had been looking for years. Detective Green also discovered that the van that had been used in the crime had been sold by Gabriel on February 23, 1999, just weeks after Erica disappeared. The van was seized and searched, but no conclusive DNA evidence was found to link Erica to the van. Days after the interview, Gabriel met with Detective Green again, this time to write a confession. Part of it reads, "Well, we were driving down a street, probably about 25 to 30 miles per hour. I was talking to Jen, looking over at her, and then heard something hit the van. We got out and didn't see anything around the van until I looked under it and discovered it was a little girl. This has been hurting me for so long. I am really sorry, Mr. and Mrs. Baker, for what has been done. Nothing was done to her after she was hit. She wasn't raped or anything like that, because I am not that sick of a person that I could just hurt someone that is so precious in God's eyes. Again, I am sorry." This confession was a victory for Detective Green and the Kettering Police Department, but they were in a race against time. The charges that Gabriel was facing had a 6-year statute of limitations. In October 2005, just 3 days before that statute ran out, Christian Gabriel was charged with tampering with evidence and gross abuse of a corpse. For his heinous crimes, he was sentenced to just 6 years in prison. Despite there being a confession, the prosecution did not have enough evidence to keep charges of vehicular manslaughter on the table. Gabriel was released in 2011 after serving his 6-year sentence. Erica's story would hit the headlines once more when Pam, Erica's grandmother, arrived at the prison to collect Gabriel upon his release. This move was highly controversial, but Pam defended her actions, stating that she went to collect him so that she could question him on the ride home. Gabriel's story continues to change, and he gives different locations each time he is asked to make a statement. He has tried to lead investigators to Erica's body, but so far, no sign of her has ever been found. Pam continues to put pressure on Gabriel. She stays updated with his address and posts Erica's missing person flyers to his house to remind him that Erica and her family are not going away. Erica's disappearance has profoundly impacted her family and the community of Kettering. Misty and Greg are now left to wonder what kind of woman Erica would have become. Misty commented that she believed her daughter would have been a nurse or a doctor due to her kind and caring nature. Several new searches have been conducted in Huffman Dam, Caesar Creek Park, and other areas, but no sign of little Erica has ever been found. Bob Green is no longer a member of the Kettering Police Department, but that hasn't stopped him from pursuing Erica's case. He vows never to let Erica's case die and hopes he will soon bring her body home to her family. Anyone with information is asked to contact Detective Mason of the Kettering Police Department at 937-296-255, quoting case number 990-266. Thanks for listening, everybody. And until next time, take care.